Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. And as we hit this Thursday afternoon edition, we are preparing for the beginning of high school basketball. It's finally here. It's finally returned. In fact, we have high school basketball going on right now. The Carbon Lady Dinos in Uinta at the Shannon Johnson Invitational. They'll play three games in 3 days. Tonight, right here on KOAL, the Emory Spartans, they travel on the road to meet American Heritage. We'll bring you the live play-by-play call. As always, I'll be joined in the booth by Scott Labrum as we tip off this brand new season. I'm looking forward to it. American Heritage is a great gym to go to. And we went there 2 years ago. Kyson Stilson dropped 42 points in that contest. It's a new era of Emory High School basketball all the way around. I'm looking forward to tonight's game, and we'll preview it in just a bit. We'll also talk on the show today some Major League Baseball. Winter meetings are here. And one of the biggest storylines we had, a lot of non-tendered players yesterday, Archie Bradley being one of them, which shocked me. Kyle Schwarber, his time with the Chicago Cubs appears to be over with. So there were a few surprises there, but the big storyline at winter meetings, it's going to be the eventual trade of Nolan Arenado. And I know a few Rocky fans, of course we have Rocky fans in this area, and look, it's sad, right? Because just two off-seasons ago, I thought, boy, they won the off-season when Machado got $300 million and Bryce Harper got, what was it, $313 or whatever it was. And they got Arenado to stay in Colorado, and they got him for less than $300 million. I thought Colorado had won the offseason. Since that point, it's been downhill. And I think you could take last year's numbers and you can throw them out the door because there were a lot of variables. We had seven-inning games. I mean, that matters. All that kind of stuff matters when you look at the sheer numbers of individual players. But it seems to be a foregone conclusion at this point in time that Arenado will get dealt. And if you go back to 2017, it reminds me so much of Giancarlo Stanton and what happened with him and the Marlins, because Arenado has a lot of money on the books, and on top of that, he has a no-trade clause. Where will Nolan Arenado go, and what will it take for the Rockies to get rid of him? Because the Rockies right now seem as motivated as anyone to move on from the Arenado era. So we'll talk about that. We'll also look at some of the big free agents and where they may go. And we'll have some baseball talk coming up in just a bit. Let's take a look at the national sports headlines in the NBA. The Los Angeles Lakers have their man Anthony Davis for at least the next 4 years. Davis signs a five-year, $190 million max contract extension with the Lakers. I say 4 years because there is a player option for that fifth year, and more than likely Davis will exercise to opt out at that point in time to really cash in. That fifth-year deal is set for $43 million. So this is the way it breaks down. Davis will make $32 million this upcoming season, $35 million the year after, $37 million the year after that, $40 million the year after that, and $43 million in the fifth year of the deal. 27 years old, already won a championship with the Lakers. And when you look at the history of this franchise, I don't believe there's any doubt that he is the next man to carry the torch of the legendary bigs in purple and gold. If it's George Mikan, if it's Kareem, Wilt, Shaq, AD is going to fit right in. I believe this guy will win multiple championships with this organization. And this comes just 24 hours after LeBron James re-ups with a two-year max. So the Lakers have their duo for the foreseeable future. They're locked up. That was the news coming out of the NBA. Let's jump to college football. And if you're a BYU fan, this is some good news. BYU needed a football opponent, a quality football opponent. And I don't know how quality this is, but they replaced Liberty as Coastal Carolina's opponent for this upcoming Saturday. Now, when I say I'm not quite sure of the quality, we got to remember Coastal Carolina is number 18 in the country. Does the committee really view them number 18? Because they have made it perfectly clear in the past two rankings that BYU has a weak schedule. Is Coastal Carolina ranked number 18 because the Pac-12 simply hasn't played enough games? Because we have question marks in the Big Ten and we have some perennial powers that are down? Or do they view Coastal Carolina as a legitimate number 18 team in the country? Both are ranked outside what's typically the New Year's Six bowl range, which is really going to get interesting as we get down to the stretch. But nonetheless, a win for BYU would give them a boost, and I believe it could put them on the cusp of the top 10. Three two-loss teams are currently ranked ahead of BYU, with Georgia, Iowa State, and also Oklahoma. So, two-loss teams ahead of BYU. If you log a victory over a legitimate top 20 team, do you catapult into the top 10? I think it's possible, but like I said, it's important that the committee truly views Coastal Carolina as number 18. And this is the best that BYU could have done. And as far as not being able to schedule a game with the Pac-12, look, Coastal Carolina, they've clinched a berth in the Sun Belt Conference Championship. They go up against Louisiana on December 19th. This could boost their resume just like it could BYU's. Of course, here in the state of Utah, we look at it from the Cougar standpoint. But BYU did not lock down a game with the Pac-12. And that, I believe, affected their standing in the minds of the committee. BYU has scored more than 40 points in 8 of its 9 games this season, and they've won the past 5 games by an average margin of 35. So honestly, when you look at what BYU is trying to accomplish, they did the best they could. Their strength of schedule right now, it's 87. They have 3 wins against FBS teams over 500 and no Power 5 opponents. It was a schedule that had to be thrown together, basically made of scratch, just to try to get a football season going. And I think that all things considered, BYU has handled their business the best they possibly could. Now, they'll have a chance to get a victory over a top 20 team. And again, it works for Coastal Carolina. If Coastal Carolina gets a win here, how will the committee view them? I don't believe Coastal Carolina is the 18th best team in the country. I don't. But that's what they're ranked. And if BYU handles their business, I hope the committee rewards them for taking this game on short notice. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. Again, plenty to get into on the show today. We have no NFL football tonight here on KOAL. Instead, we get multiple Monday games. We get Tuesday games. No Thursday game. We'll still give you the fantasy football primer. In fact, we'll do that next segment here on the show. If you play fantasy football, you're probably gearing up for the playoffs. Who are some guys you should keep an eye on or maybe even consider adding to your roster at this stage? We'll talk to Joe Bartle of rotowire.com, and then, of course, we'll talk more Major League Baseball, and we'll give you the rundown of what's happening on the local sports front. That is all straight ahead right here on this edition of Drive Time Sports.
More Drive Time Sports on KOAN. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
So now you open my eyes.
Here comes the quarterback, Burrow, looking for a block, and he got it up in the front by Hopkins into the end zone. Touchdown!
I feel like I'm gonna lose my way.
It's Thursday, and we have no NFL football tonight. Instead, we had a matinee game yesterday, Pittsburgh-Baltimore. That wrapped up Week 12. Now we're preparing for Week 13, which means we have multiple Monday games, Tuesday games, and of course, if you play fantasy football, more than likely the final week of your regular season, if not the opening round of the playoffs. We're going to talk about some of those waiver wire pickups that may push your team into the playoffs or maybe over the top getting into the postseason right now. Joining us from RotoWire, we have Joe Bartle. And Joe, as always, I enjoy the conversations. Thank you again.
Yeah, happy to talk some fantasy football as we enter this probably pivotal week for a lot of different people.
Yeah, week 13. We've been talking fantasy football for 13 weeks, Joe, and as we get down to it, just taking a look at some of the quarterbacks that will be on bye here in week 13, Tom Brady, Teddy Bridgewater, I think that's the perfect place to start. Hopefully you have a viable backup if Tom Brady is your guy. If not, you're going to be searching the waiver wire for a quarterback in week 13.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people should have been preparing for this. These are the last two teams on bye, so you should have been aware of Teddy Bridgewater and Tom Brady, and to some extent as well, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Rob Gronkowski, you know, like those wide receiver groups, Antonio Brown, for example. And on the Panthers side, too, DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Curtis Samuel. The fact that Christian McCaffrey has still been injured and kind of out, I think might actually help a few fantasy managers and certainly Mike Davis as well. So there's some pretty critical names from a fantasy perspective that I imagine are going to be affecting the opportunity for a fantasy playoffs, or, like, to make it to the fantasy playoffs. And it's frustrating. Like, if you are in a league where your playoffs are starting, it's weird that there's going to be a bye week that's affected by it. I'm in one of those leagues right now, and I have a Ronald Jones that's been starting for me quite a bit. But I won't be able to rely on. So that's like a frustrating aspect too. But in the quarterbacks, you know, there might be a few guys available. Derek Carr, I imagine, already picked up. He's facing the Jets though this week. Maybe there is some overzealous fantasy man who dropped Cam Newton. I think that's going to be a pretty good matchup for him against the Chargers defense, especially with how bad they are against the run. But I don't know. Like, maybe Baker Mayfield against the Titans. Titans have been so bad passing the ball or stopping the pass, and Baker Mayfield's looked pretty good the past couple weeks. There's not a lot of great options. Like, in a few weeks, I'm considering Mitchell Trubisky against the Lions, and I'm not excited about that. I understand how bad of the ramifications are, but it's just the point of the year where injuries have taken a toll. Maybe people are already planning ahead of time or trying to stop others from having quarterback options. It's a tough point right now, and foresight and planning for the fantasy playoffs and past that point is a big critical part of the strategy in fantasy football.
Yeah, no question. Ryan Fitzpatrick may be available. I don't know what the priority list would look like. I mean, to me, and honestly, Joe, I don't even think it's close. If Fitzpatrick's out there, is probably someone you probably want to grab immediately, because based on the fantasy production, he's a much better fantasy quarterback than Tua Tagovailoa, and I don't even think it's close.
Yeah, absolutely. I just don't think Fitzpatrick's playing. I think the indication right now is that Tua is going to be the starting quarterback against the Bengals this upcoming week. And if you're the Dolphins, I'm not sure I exactly understand why you're rushing your prized first-round pick back when he has an injury to his throwing thumb. But all the reports and indications seem to suggest Tua is going to play, and this is more of a one-week blip. He could have played this past week, but they're taking precautions with him. So I'm just assuming Fitzpatrick's not out there. I think it's going to be Tua that starts. But you're right. If for whatever the reason, Tua is out a second consecutive week, I think Fitzpatrick is who I'd rather have. We have Baker Mayfield ranked at 14 and Fitzpatrick ranked at 18. I think I'd flip-flop that. I'd rather have Fitzpatrick. But I'd rather have Baker over Trubisky again, who's going to have to consider it. And maybe other people do too with the Lions matchup this week.
Let's jump over to the running back spot, because Christian McCaffrey, if he would have been available, he's on a bye, so that's not an option. Mike Davis, Ronald Jones, Leonard Fournette, you mentioned some of the running backs. When I take a look at my league to see some candidates that are available, two names pop up to me almost immediately, and it's Devontae Booker, and there's a chance that Cam Akers is going to be available on your waiver wire as well. And if you have paid attention to the Los Angeles Rams over the last 2 weeks, that three-headed monster is starting to slowly slim up just a tad bit. I mean, we're not seeing a lot of Malcolm Brown. We are seeing Daryl Henderson. We're seeing Cam Akers. Cam Akers had his first touchdown just a couple of weeks ago. So really, when you look at the way things are shaping up in the Ram backfield, Cam Akers is not a bad play. And I think you have to look hard at Devontae Booker as well, Joe.
Yeah, actually, I was going to go with Booker. I think that's going to be the guy that, if you have a number one waiver wire claim or competing at this point, he absolutely needs to be in a conversation. I think Booker at this stage, is probably a guy that I'm spending 80 or 90% of my budget on. Whatever's left, I'm going to go ahead and get him. And I guess let's talk strategy for a second when you're putting these free agent bids. We are entering the final week of the regular season for many people in fantasy. If you are in a league that does the free agent budget, which I recommend, that's probably my preferred option when it comes to league formats, look at what the rest of your league has available to spend on players. If there is somebody that has more than you, for example, let's say somebody has $70 remaining for a free agent budget, and is still competing, which would be crazy to me, and you have 64, I would be bidding like $2 over the next person. So obviously you can't beat that guy that has $70 for free agency, but I'd be bidding $2 over the next guy, just in the off chance that the first person, the guy that has $70, is going to try to get cute with Devontae Booker. I think it's a very real possibility that Josh Jacobs does not play this Sunday against the Jets. It's not like the Raiders need Jacobs against the Jets anyway, and Booker has been quietly more productive than Jacobs when the two of them playing as is. I think Booker is by far the top pick of this week, and I get it with Cam Akers. I still want to try to avoid that Rams backfield if I can. Now, you might not have the luxury of doing so, and if that's the case, Akers is a very quality number two option and looks to be the more explosive guy by far. I'm just not trusting Sean McVay when it comes to decision-making at running back, and I think the more bodies, the better is how he's thinking, which is frustrating for fantasy managers, but certainly is helping that Rams offense have an effective running game for most of the season.
Again, Joe Bartle of RotoWire.com, our guest right now as we talk fantasy football going in to what may be the final week of your regular season or week one of your playoffs. We've talked quarterbacks, we've talked running backs. Let's jump over to the wide receiver position. It's a tough week for me at that spot. I also have Will Fuller, who I have relied on heavily throughout this season. Obviously, that's not going to be an option for the remainder of the season. So when I dig deep into the wide receiver waiver wire, there's always options there, you know, but I also have Julio Jones as a guy that been hurt here and there throughout the entire season. He's been hard to rely on, and somehow, some way, this morning Debo Samuel was available. I grabbed him almost immediately. If you're looking to see if anybody else is available, you know, Brandon Ayuk may be available from the 49ers as well. I think he's a viable option. Nelson Aguilar may be available for the Raiders. I mean, there's options at wide receiver. It's definitely not as bleak as, say, the running back or quarterback spot.
Yeah, and I'll give you another name that I think for a lot of people in like 12 or 14 team leagues should definitely consider. It's Gabriel Davis for the Bills. Now with John Brown placed on injured reserve for the next 3 weeks, there isn't any concern about Brown cutting into the production. Diggs was kind of limited. They got him going towards the end of that game. But, I mean, the Bills' running attack was just destroying the Chargers. I do not think that's going to be a similar situation. We're not going to see Singletary and Zach Moss do what they did this past week against the 49ers this week. So if that's the case, there's going to be more passing involved. And I really do think Gabriel Davis makes a lot of sense. Yes, there's the Cole Beasley and Stephon Diggs, and I imagine Beasley is rostered in just about every format. And in a PPR league, he makes complete sense. But if you're like trying to dig a little bit deeper past the Debo Samuels, which shouldn't have been available, but I know were in a lot of different Yahoo leagues because we talked about that on the Tuesday podcast last week, I think Gabriel Davis makes a lot of sense. Three catches, 79 yards, and touchdown. It's not great numbers from this past week, and a touchdown did come off a trick play. But I do think he's going to get more involved when the Bills have to pass in the SIG game, where I imagine that's going to be the case against the Niners.
Okay, let's talk PPR for a moment, Hunter Renfrow, because we were just talking about Devontae Booker, and there's a chance that Hunter Renfrow is going to be available at a PPR league. Do you touch him this week?
Yeah, I guess I could see that happening. For as great as the Jets are doing bad, and they are very, very great at that, their run defense is less bad than their pass defense. And we've seen teams just sort of pile on the production in the first half and then do, all right, we'll just give the carries to the running backs and then just be fine. So, again, I'm anticipating Josh Jacobs does not play in this contest. The Raiders have no reason to really force it in this situation. I guess I would be a little bit concerned that Darren Waller is the one that gets more of the intermediate route production, and we've seen that in the past, right? Waller's games, biggest games have coincided with a dip in Hunter Renfrow, and you flip the script this past week. It was Darren Waller who struggled. Hunter Renfrow, who got seven catches for 73 yards against the Falcons. I really think it's going to be more of a Darren Waller game, and almost a get-right Darren Waller game against the Jets, so I'm less likely to buy into Hunter Renfrow in a PPR league. But there are certainly worse options you could go after. And like you talked about Brandon Ayuk. Yeah, I actually think I'd rather have Hunter Renfrow over Ayuk because there's an opportunity that the passing game for the Raiders is just going to be, you know, full throttle for three quarters, two quarters, whatever it is. And then they kind of, you know, laid on to the Jets. And that point forward, they're just running the ball. So I think Devontae Booker, fine, still the top pickup at running back. But Hunter Renfrow makes some sense if you really are scrambling in a PPR league.
Let's move on to tight end, Joe, because, again, we mentioned no Rob Gronkowski. And look, as we get down to it, tight end is, in my mind, tight end is such a wild card spot. I've been done in by tight ends before in fantasy football. I don't know if you've had the same experience or not, but I'm always looking for priority tight ends. And this week, one of the names that absolutely fascinates me is Austin Hooper. I know that there's a million other tight ends that you could look to see if they're available. I mean, Kyle Rudolph is not rostered in many leagues. You have Logan Thomas, Trey Burton. Any of those tight end names appeal to you if that is a problem going into this week?
Yeah, I'd rather have, I think, a Kyle Rudolph, especially if Irv Smith is out. But if Irv Smith is active, no, there's no way. I mean, the way the Vikings have been operating a tight end position, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't know. Like it is a hard spot. Tight end's been hard all year, and it's crazy. That was one of the things entering the season that I probably was most wrong about. I thought there was a lot of value in the 7 to 12 range of tight ends drafted. And quite frankly, there's been no value other than Travis Kelce and Darren Waller. And to some extent, you could get Mark Andrews, but he's on the COVID list right now and has been inconsistent at times. Like, it just has been so top-heavy that if you don't have one of those two guys, and we just saw Waller struggle this past week, too. So it isn't even him. I don't know. It's a frustrating thing. There was a Dallas Goedert was available in a lot of different leagues a couple weeks ago. I love him against the Packers this week, although I can't imagine he's available now. Zach Ertz has just been activated off of injured reserve. Ertz will be just fine, too, against the Packers. Maybe he's available in your leagues. Like, those are names you consider right away or I'd look at. A Jordan Reed, possibly, if he's healthy this week. Jordan Reed makes sense, too. I'm not really buying Austin Hooper other than the matchup, because the Titans' defense is not good stopping the pass. I think the Browns want to run the ball, though, so it's going to be kind of a clash of schemes as opposed to what you should be doing. So the way that the Browns have been operating their offense, I just don't see a scenario where Austin Hooper is going to be valuable. And after coming off the appendectomy, he's gotten just 6 catches in 3 games. Like, they use him way more as a blocker as opposed to receiver. Yes, he got the touchdown this past week. That was only his second red zone target in, 6 or 7 weeks now? I don't know. I'm not buying Austin Hooper. I think he's kind of in that Dalton Schultz, Logan Thomas, Hayden Hurst range. And I think Trey Burton makes a little bit more sense, but even he is also in that category. There just isn't a lot of great tight ends are available right now. Maybe an Eric Ebron. I don't know why he would be available the way he's been playing the past couple weeks, but there's some consideration for him, too. It's just a tough spot right now.
Definitely. Yeah. Tight end has been hard all year long. I mean, in a league where I'm looking for a tight end, I went with George Kittle early on, and that obviously did not work out. So tight end has been a struggle all season long. Joe Bartle again of rotowire.com. Joe, I look forward to these conversations each week. Before I let you go, I'm sure that everything's really ramping up as it is now go time. It's kind of win or go home as far as fantasy sports are concerned. And of course, you're very good at answering questions on Twitter, and you guys have all kinds of other avenues that can help out players.
Yeah, you can always shoot a question to me at JB Fantasy Sports. I'll be glad to answer any fantasy questions that are going on, especially with how important things are happening right now. I didn't actually get to do the podcast this week. I had a family emergency to take care of, but my co-host Jake Witarski and my fill-in Jeff Erickson did a fantastic job on the Tuesday Word of Wear podcast. Definitely check that out. There's content for you, whether it be on Wednesday or Thursday from a podcast perspective, getting you prepared for that Week 13 slate. I love listening to those shows. If you're into DFS, the Friday show on the podcast network is also fantastic. They do a great job. But more importantly, we have other sports swinging in the action. Baseball is doing all their transaction stuff right now. We got you covered on the site for that. But NBA in particular, we have all your draft coverage. Like, if you're preparing for your NBA draft, the preseason games, how the roster's going to look, all the transactions that occurred in this crazy past, multi-week offseason for the NBA. All that's set for you on the site. Just go to rotowire.com/free. You get a 10-day free trial. Check it out. If you're not in the NFL, you can get the NBA, you can get the baseball, everything you need. College basketball, too. We've been going crazy for that. Just check it out on the site. And again, the 10-day free trial is rotowire.com/free.
Joe Bartle, again, always a pleasure to get you on the show. Joe, look forward to doing it again next week. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Let's break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We're going to flip. We'll talk Major League Baseball. It was a busy day yesterday. Transactions, as Joe just mentioned, starting to heat up a little bit. We'll talk MLB when we return, in the future of Nolan Arenado in Colorado. That's next right here on Drive Time Sports.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Feeling like a bullet, jumping out of
gun. I'm feeling like a winner. Yes, it's been a little while since we have talked Major League Baseball on the show. In fact, we haven't talked baseball since the Los Angeles Dodgers won the 2020 World Series Championship. And now that winter meetings are picking up, yesterday was a very big day for Major League Baseball. In fact, there are a lot of free agents that could help some teams cross over into that next tier. I thought yesterday was fascinating as far as Major League Baseball is concerned. And the countdown for Nolan Arenado's time in Colorado to come to an end, I think it's reaching its end point. I just don't see a situation where the Rockies can hold on to Arenado much longer. We're going to talk about those stories and more right now with our next guest, Steve Bordstein. He joins us periodically to talk Major League Baseball and hot stove talk. It's always some of the most fascinating conversations to have. Steve, thank you so much for the time today. It's a pleasure.
I appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Let's start by talking about Nolan Arenado, and then we'll dive into the free agents. When you look at what the Rockies have to get done, I don't believe there's any question. They have to move him. They have to. There's discontent in the clubhouse. Arenado does not want to be there, and I don't think that Colorado wants him there. Now, it's not as easy in Major League Baseball just to say, okay, we have one of the premier players at the hot corner. He doesn't want to be here. There should be 29 teams that line up to take Nolan Arenado, right? No, because there's a lot of money attached to Arenado, and he also has a no-trade clause attached to that deal. This is why I believe we're down to about two or three teams that could actually acquire Arenado, one of those teams being the 2020 World Series champion Dodgers, and I'll take it one step further. It reeks of the Giancarlo Stanton situation in Miami. Remember, he was dealt to St. Louis. He blocked it with his no-trade clause. He was dealt to San Francisco. He blocked it with his no-trade clause. He forced his way to New York. The Marlins had no leverage. And unfortunately, right now, I feel as if the Rockies have no leverage.
And the Rockies have made it abundantly clear that they aren't interested in leverage. I mean, the reports that are coming out right now is that they're essentially ready to gut this whole thing. We're getting reports now about Trevor Story, you know, that he may, in fact, be moved at some point in time. So the Rockies themselves aren't really appearing to have much leverage or want leverage in the first place. So if Arenado is unhappy and Arenado wants to come back to Los Angeles or Southern California where he grew up and there's a need for the Dodgers at that position, and we can get into that discussion a little bit as well, then by all means, go get him. And, you know, what I reject is the idea, and you and I have talked about this before, that, you know, the Dodgers, people talk about them as the best team money can buy, right? Other than Mookie Betts, and some of the smaller sort of bargain deals that allowed the Dodgers to get guys like Justin Turner and Max Muncy, and you and I were talking off the air about Gratterall and Trinan, who added a huge lift to that bullpen. They didn't spend a lot of money. The Dodgers didn't go breaking the bank like the Yankees did with Giancarlo Stanton. So I reject that notion that somehow the Dodgers are going to be the next Yankees in the sense that they haven't been doing this historically. The Yankees have been doing this for decades.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think that sometimes fans get the idea of a large market wrapped up with the best team money can buy. And we can't do that. And the same thing happens in the NBA, right? I don't want to stray too far from Major League Baseball, but when you look at the owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, Jeannie Buss, she's a mom and pop shop in the NBA, right? You look at some of the other owners, and an NBA, owning an NBA team is a side hustle for them. That's not the case with Jeannie Buss. Yes, the Lakers are in a large market, but that doesn't mean that she has the deepest pockets, okay? Now, the Dodgers, they have very deep pockets. There's no question. But when you look at the way the team was built, nobody wanted Max Muncy. Nobody wanted Justin Turner, right? Clayton Kershaw is homegrown. Walker Buehler is homegrown. In fact, the Dodgers, I could throw this statistic at you, all five of their starters have played for one team during the course of their career, the Los Angeles Dodgers. So that logic doesn't jive.
No, it doesn't. But again, it's a nice talking point, and it gets everyone fired up. And it happens more in Major League Baseball, and happens more in the NBA, like you mentioned, with big market teams. Would the New Orleans is a bad example. Thinking of a small team and a small. Would the Utah Jazz be able to afford a LeBron James contract? No, absolutely not. They're a small town team in a small town area. So, no, they're not going to be able to afford it. The Lakers can. The Dodgers can. And that doesn't make them greedy pigs. It makes them the best team in baseball that just happens to be in a big market, and yes, they can afford that. That doesn't make them the devils. It doesn't make them the worst people in the world.
No, I agree. I agree. So let's look at the possible destinations if the Rockies do move on from Nolan Arenado. Obviously, I think if you asked him, and he was being 100% honest with you, he would want to go to the Dodgers. It's his hometown team. Outside of that, I still believe there are two other National League teams that he would consider waiving that no-trade clause for, one of them being the Washington Nationals. I could see it a situation where the Rockies strike a deal with the New York Mets, and Nolan Arenado flat-out says, no, I'm not going. Again, I think that this has a very similar feel to what happened with Stanton, and I believe that Arenado will go where he wants to go.
Absolutely, and you know, and if it's and Arenado shouldn't be the one link that the Dodgers are looking at, right? I mean, and you and I have talked about this off the air. Arenado comes with his own set of issues, right? Arenado comes with maybe he's a bit of a hothead in the clubhouse. Maybe he's not well-liked by some of his teammates. Okay, those are fine issues. If that ends up being a thing that the Dodgers are a little bit more concerned of, okay, then why not go after a guy like Chris Bryant? Why not make a move in that direction? Go after a guy like Trevor Bauer, who he himself comes with his set of issues as well. The Dodgers aren't known for being that flashy team. I know you and I remember the days of Yasiel Puig, and we either loved Yasiel Puig or we hated Yasiel Puig. Bauer's that kind of divisive guy in the clubhouse where he could be a bit of a hothead. Bauer could be that guy. Arenado might be that guy, and maybe that's a move that the Dodgers don't want to make. How big a factor is that to you as a Dodger fan and as someone who follows him as closely as I do? Does the off-the-field stuff bother you?
You know, if I'm a Dodger fan, no, it doesn't bother me because you have a clubhouse full of champions. Okay, if I'm the Nationals, it doesn't bother me because I have a guy like a Max Scherzer, a Steven Strasburg, right? You have a clubhouse full of champions. If I'm the New York Mets, yeah, it worries me a little bit. I think culture matters when we're talking about certain players. There's a reason why Yasiel Puig was able to last as long as he did with the Dodgers, and there's a reason why Puig was not able to last as long with Cincinnati and Cleveland, right? You got to look at the clubhouse culture. I think there are just a handful of spots where Trevor Bauer could be Trevor Bauer in Major League Baseball, and a lot of that has to do with the surrounding pieces and the culture in the clubhouse.
Fair. That's fair. Like, I don't think a Mookie Betts would have worked out as well on a team that didn't have expectations. Why? Because he has expectations. Why does he have expectations? Because he won a championship. He's come from that background. He understands that background. Arenado hasn't got that background, but he desperately wants that background. And I think he's tired of being surrounded by players in Denver that either seemingly aren't interested or just aren't good enough, and certainly doesn't have the interest in being around an organization and a management team that is seemingly disinterested in pushing that envelope a little bit further and getting a championship.
Again, Steve Bortstein, our guest right now as we talk hot stove and Major League Baseball. Steve, let's move on from Nolan Arenado. We'll talk about that again in just a moment. We'll get final predictions. I want to talk about the 10 most, not even the 10 most, maybe four or five most intriguing non-tendered players from yesterday. One right off at the top of my head that I look at and I say, okay, this is a game changer, was Archie Bradley. Bradley had one of the best seasons of his career, if you look at his ERA or his strikeout to walk ratio. And when you look at what relief pitchers, the excitement and the constant need for a relief pitcher at the trade deadline, you look at someone like Archie Bradley, right? He is now a non-tendered free agent, and I believe that Archie Bradley is going to have a whole lot of interest around his name, especially considering the fact that we don't have marquee free agents this offseason. This one surprised me yesterday.
Yeah, it surprised me, too. It surprised me for a couple of reasons, simply because, and we're talking about these smaller teams, right? I mean, I don't know how you look at Archie. I don't know how you look at the Diamondbacks. I don't know how you look at the teams, you know, where he comes from, what have you. But wouldn't you want to have as many recognizable names around there? Wouldn't you want to have as many recognizable names on your roster? So, you know, if you're looking at the Reds, okay, great, good move for them. But it is a game changer for the Reds, who I think are close. You and I talked about the Reds a lot during this past season. I just wonder what the reason is for the Diamondbacks. I mean, what are you getting out of this?
You know, for me, and I think you just look at the Tampa Bay Rays, right? You don't have to have a group of 25, 27 superstars. But honestly, Steve, if I'm going to compete, I want a guy who has experience in high-leverage roles at whatever spot I have him coming out of my bullpen, and that's what Archie Bradley has. He has experience in high-leverage roles, and that's why several contenders will be interested in him.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out, but I think I'm more surprised at how eager they were to make this move, how eager Cincinnati was to make this move and to move on from this.
Okay, let's talk Chicago Cubs, because this is an organization that may in fact be going through a rebuild mode after Theo Epstein has now left. Kyle Schwarber, who was horrible last season, I think he batted .180, and in terms of what he can bring you in the field, he's not a good left fielder, not a good hitter. Still, he makes loud contact. It's a guy that is very recognizable, and now he's going to hit the market. The Cubs don't want Kyle Schwarber, and I understand why they don't want him. Is there a market for Schwarber, and where does he end up?
You know, I gotta believe there's still a market for Schwarber. I look at last year. Some guys were on, some guys just weren't. But there's been that gap, right? You gotta go back now to 2016 with Schwarber, when he was last really relevant, when he won the World Series, when he helped the Cubs win the World Series. But boy, you gotta believe there's a market for him. But he's a guy who, to your exact specifications there, he either hits a lot of home runs or he's absent in the batter's box. And defensively, he's limited. So I think you do find a place for him, but I don't think anyone's rushing out the door to get him. I think he's a good DH prospect. An American League team needs a recognizable name, someone who can clear bases in the bottom part of your order. I think that's where you're looking at, but who's that team? I mean, is it a Cleveland Indians team that could desperately use some extra bats in the lineup? Is it a Toronto Blue Jays, a team that's trying to keep pace with the Rays and the Yankees, the American League East? I think that's where you're looking at as far as the DH is concerned, because I don't know what version of Schwarber we're going to get this year. Certainly the Cubs didn't know. That's why they made this move.
Right, and ultimately, I think you're spot on. It's someone that's going to be batting at the bottom of the order, but it's an obvious name for the Cubs to move on from the Theo Epstein era, and that's what we're going to see more and more of this. I mean, whatever happens with Chris Bryant, I think you'd be a fool to think that Chris Bryant is a Cub for the foreseeable future.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I would love to. I mean, believe me, when the free agents thing started, Chris Bryant was a name I was very interested in as a Dodgers fan. But I could see him going any number of places. And you know, when you now look at the Theo Epstein era now coming to an end, you know, I mean, obviously they're done. They're gonna change everything. So it's funny to see where teams are gonna go now that we're seeing some of the changes happening in front offices around the major leagues.
Steve, we'll end by jumping back over to Nolan Arenado. Where does he end up?
I think we get our wish. I think if you're a Dodgers fan, we get our wish. We get Arenado. But okay, my question then comes to, what happens to Justin Turner? What happens to Edwin Rios? What happens with third base?
Yeah, I would have to believe that in any deal for Arenado, if he was to go to the Dodgers, Edwin Rios would be on his way to Colorado. I have to believe that. And as far as Justin Turner, I don't believe he goes anywhere. I think he's a DH. I think the Dodgers have a spot for him. I think you could also use Justin Turner at first base if you absolutely need to. So in my mind, Edwin Rios, and if I'm the Colorado Rockies, I make that a point, because I do believe Edwin Rios can play baseball. The Dodgers had to turn to him in the final two innings of a game-clinching World Series championship tilt, and Edwin Rios was fine on the field. I believe he has to be in any trade that sends Arenado to the Dodgers, and I think Rios would fit in fine at Coors Field.
If part of that deal also requires a Gavin Lux, if part of that deal also requires, let's say, a hot prospect catcher, how do you look at that? I mean, because that's where I start to look at, because I don't want to lose the idea of losing Kiver Ruiz, and a lot of people may not even know who the name Kiver Ruiz is yet, but I think there are teams out there that know who Kiver Ruiz is. If you've been following Dodger baseball, you know who Kiver Ruiz is. I don't want to make those guys expendable. I don't want to lose a Gavin Lux. I don't want to lose a Kiver Ruiz for this deal.
I don't care if it's the Dodgers, the Nationals, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Rays. I don't care which team we're talking about. I do not care about prospects. And I can't stress that enough. I do not care about prospects. If you can cash in your chips and bring in an immediate difference maker and someone that can, and he's going to be in the running as far as, you know, a MVP-type candidate, someone that you know is going to be a Gold Glove candidate, the hot corner, I don't care. You cash in those chips. I don't care what team it is.
So you're about past performance. It's not about future expectations.
Always. 100%.
Okay. That's fair. And that's where I think you and I were sort of, you know, when you had talked about this a little bit last week, that you were kind of all in on the Arenado deal happening, was I'm leery about 5 years, 6 years from now. I'm leery about that. And that's where I'm always going to sit. I'm fine if that's the direction they go. And I'll say the same thing about Trevor Bauer. Like, if it ends up not being Arenado, but it ends up being a Bauer, and we have to shift some players around, okay, that's fine. I don't want to necessarily lose both of those guys, Gavin Lux or Kyber Ruiz. I'm okay with one, but not both. But again, it's one of those things where I don't want to sell future prospects, but you are past performance guy, and I get that. I'm the same way in a lot of areas as far as moves are concerned. But I think that you got to be concerned about depth at these positions that we're now sort of creating a little bit of a hole for.
Understandable, yeah, I understand that as well. Steve Bordstein again. He joins us to talk Major League Baseball among other sports. Steve, it is always a pleasure to get you on. I know we're going to have plenty more baseball to talk relatively soon. Hot stove is heating up. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime, sir. Thank you.
We're going to break one last time. We'll return and put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports right after this on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.